And as luck would have it, we have Jason Anik here in studio. Jason, welcome to WICN.
Okay, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
It's wonderful to have you here. Of course, this is part of our lead up to the concert that you'll be doing as part of the Brian Barlow concert series Friday, May 3rd and in Shrewsbury. Let's talk a little bit about the concept of gypsy jazz. And I'll go out there and say the first time I actually was made aware there was anything called gypsy jazz was actually as a result of a Woody Allen movie, Sweet and Lowdown, where Sean Penn plays a guitarist who, if memory serves, is insanely jealous of Django Reinhardt. And in fact, I don't even think the name is ever mentioned in that movie. He just keeps referring to that gypsy guitarist in Paris or something like that.
That's right.
Tell us about the origins of gypsy jazz and how this resonates with you in the year of our Lord 2024.
Yeah. Well, you're in that movie. He says he's the second best guitar player, and the only guitar player better than him is this Django figure. Mm-hmm. He has a kind of a mythical, like, mystique and legend around him. Anyone who hears Django's playing is instantly falls in love with it, the virtuosity, the passion, the creativity. Those are things that I've always loved in Django's music, as well as his partner in crime, and the one who formed the Hot Club of France with him, Stefan Grappelli, great jazz violinist. I was lucky that my dad was also really into this music and introduced it to me pretty early on. I grew up playing a variety of different styles, classical music. I did fiddle music with my dad, and I got the bug for improvising and composing, and then I got really into jazz. And then my dad brought me to see Stefan Grappelli perform when I was around 11 years old.
Oh, you saw him?
I actually saw him here in Worcester at Mechanics Hall.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was one of his last tours in the U.S. He was 89. It was a formidable experience. And I just really took to this style of music. I love the improvisation element of it, and I really just continued to explore it, and I went to camps and festivals all around the world, meeting great young players and legends of the style. And there's a real community to this style of music, and that's also where I met a lot of the members who then we joined for Rhythm Future Quartet.
Now, for those who may not be familiar with Stefan Grappelli, it's important to note that there was a great history of jazz violin even before Jean-Luc Ponty, for those people whose memories only go back as far as the 70s and the 80s. Talk about what Grappelli did for the music and how he set a foundation for others to follow along.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we think about jazz in general, the art form of jazz, violin isn't the instrument that's usually at the forefront. You know, we're thinking about trumpet and saxophone, but we are lucky that we have proponents like Stefan Grappelli and before him Joe Venuti, who really pushed the violin into the jazz idiom and took it to the next level and made violin a real soloistic instrument. And of course, when you hear violin next to guitar, it's just really a match made in heaven. So this style that was created with the Hot Club of France and what we do with Rhythm Future Quartet really has the violin at the center of it. And of course, as a violinist, that's something I love about it. And it's, you know, the violin really shines.
Yeah. Well, we need to take a very quick break. When we come back, we're going to play a request that Melanie just made for us off of your Travels album, Come Together, which is, of course, a Beatles cover. Mm-hmm. What should our listeners be listening to in that cut?
Yeah, so another style of music I grew up listening to was the Beatles. I mean, it's some of my favorite music outside of the jazz world. But it also happens to work great as a jazz instrumental. So I do a lot of the arranging for the band, and I've arranged a few Beatles songs over the years in the jazz setting, and it just works great. So you'll hear the melody, but you'll kind of get to see what we do and how we twist this classic, iconic song into kind of this gypsy jazz setting.
Terrific. That'll be the Rhythm Future Quartet with Come Together, right. right after this.
The Rhythm Future Quartet keeps the spirit of gypsy jazz alive, and this virtuosic foursome headlines the next WICN Brian Barlow Concert Series event on Friday, May 3rd at the Robert R.J. Performing Arts Center, Founders Hall, at St. John's High School in Shrewsbury. Influenced by the classic quintet of the Hot Club of France and yet completely original, you'll hear dynamic arrangements of gypsy jazz standards as well as original works. Ticket and event info is available at WICN.org. Support for the Brian Barlow Concert Series comes from the Stoddard Charitable Trust and the Fletcher Foundation.
101.5 WICN, the Rhythm Future Quartet, with the Lennon and McCartney tune Come Together. Jason Anik, leader of the Rhythm Future Quartet, is with me here in studio. Jason, that was a nice cover of that tune.
Oh, thank you.
Was that your arrangement?
Yeah, that's my arrangement. Mm-hmm.
So when you take a tune like Come Together that everybody's heard a million times on FM radio, particularly if it's a Beatles tune, how do you go about making that arrangement so that it sounds different from what we've ever heard before?
I feel like there have been instrumental covers of Beatles before. I mean, it's such iconic music, and the melody is so strong, and the chord progression is strong, so it naturally fits well in a jazz setting. But my personal love for the Beatles is something that, another reason I like to bring it into the mix when I'm thinking about songs. And it's nice to have something that's somewhat familiar as well and within a set. But how do I arrange it? For me, it's a balance of really honoring the song, but not just playing it down without any spice or any extra elements. So I usually will figure out how I can get the core melody across. We played around with the groove a little bit and, kind of did it more like a funk thing. And I added two improv sections that kind of hinted at some of the similar to like the solo sections in the song, but then we added and reharmed it a little bit as well. And then I added a couple little interludes and like little things that kind of just made it come alive. But really, I'm trying to pay attention and honor the song, make sure that melody comes across, but see how I can really make it exciting and fresh.
Do you have any particular influence, any prior arrangers? I guess arranging really is an art. It's wholly distinct from composing. Are there any particular arrangers that you feel influenced by?
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like most of the arranging that I've learned is just listening and kind of picking apart some of my favorite songs versus like gone as deep. I mean, I have looked at scores for things and started to study it, but I never studied it as in depth as somebody who maybe studied arranging at a school, for example. But I think I've just absorbed a lot. I mean, even listening to the Beatles, they have incredible arrangements.
Yeah.
Beach Boys and some of these other non-jazz groups, I've learned a lot about arranging that I've brought into it. And just listening to a lot of the iconic albums, for sure. I actually definitely got inspired a lot by, as far as more contemporary artists, I listen to a lot of Joshua Redman's albums. Mm-hmm. I feel like he always does a good job not just making it a blowing session, which is let's play a tune and improvise.
Which he could certainly do if he wanted to.
Which he could easily do, but I like that. And so, or like someone like Brad Meldow, who also plays and arranges Beatles songs as well.
So, his last album, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I've always been drawn to that element of artists who there's room for improvisation, but there's a clear structure, there's an arc to the song, there's intros, there's reharmonization, maybe the solo sections change based on who the soloist is. I think it just makes it a more engaging listening experience.
Let's talk about the musicality before we go back to another cut. The thing that impresses me, well, among the things that really impress me about this type of music is the level of musicianship. You cannot sleepwalk your way through this music the way you can, frankly, some types of jazz. I mean, the level of technique is really amazing. And it's not just the shredding on violin or the guitar or what have you, but just there's an intricacy there that you guys obviously honor in doing this. And can you talk a little bit about just the physicality of playing this music.
Yeah, yeah, being acoustic instruments and really trying to have a really good sound and trying to really honor, like, our heroes. Django had such a great tone and fluidity and creativity, virtuosity. And Stefan Grappelli, same thing. Beautiful sound, but also very vibrant and very virtuosic. So those are the people that we're trying to emulate in a way, mm-hmm. even though we put our own spin on it. So they set a pretty high bar. So yeah, you have to have your act together. And for me, I draw on a lot of my classical training. For some songs that you know you're featuring today, you might hear these doubled lines that are really fast of guitar and violin trying to double perfectly. I really draw on some of my classical training. Our newest member, Henry Acker, who's only 19, it has to be a past life because
yeah.
he's just absolutely unbelievable. And he joined the band a year ago, so you'll get to see Henry in action if you come to the show. The Rhythm Future Quartet show coming up. And, you know, it's a lot of practice. It's a lot of emulating our favorites. Another great guitar player and violin combination is Borelli Legrand and Florin Nicolescu. And they're big influences on us. And they're doing it also around today. Proponents of this style of music, and they set a high bar as well as far as virtuosity, but also depth in the music as well. So it's not just all flash, it's passion, and it's like a real, there's a lot of emotion, there's a lot of deep feeling within every note as well. So yeah, it covers the full spectrum as a musician, and that's the thing that excites me and keeps me to want to keep working on it, keep practicing. It's a never-ending journey.
The concert to which Jason refers is the next Brian Barlow concert event, which will be Friday, May the 3rd. I think it is 7:30, yes, at St. John's High School in Shrewsbury. Tickets are moving. In fact, we've sold a couple just in the last few minutes. So if you have an interest, best not to wait till the last minute because you may find yourself staring down the barrel of a sellout show. At least we certainly hope so. I'm going to play My Blue Heaven. What would you like to say as an intro into that cut?
Yeah, this one off of the new record.
Actually, I had off of this one.
Oh, gotcha. Oh yeah, the first time. Yeah, I've recorded this song twice. Yeah, there are certain standards in the jazz repertoire that are just really fun to play. So as a improviser, they just are really enjoyable, and there's something about the melody that's just very joyous, very happy and uplifting. And I think that's one of the things I love about this music, is just how it makes people smile and it makes people tap their feet. And this is a song that really encapsulates that feeling.
Well, let's play both. Let's play the Rhythm Future Quartet, the first one, then we'll play the more recent one, because a good song can withstand interpretation. And let's do a little compare and contrast afterwards. This is My Blue Heaven, the Rhythm Future Quartet. two different versions of My Blue Heaven, one violinist on both of them, Jason Anik. Jason, we've only got a couple minutes before NPR News, but tell us, those are two very different takes on that song. What do you hear when it's played back for you?
And 10 years apart.
Yeah.
So the first one you played was the very first album we did with Rhythm Future Quartet, and it was a lot faster. A little peppier. Maybe I mellowed out. The version that we heard after was from my tribute to Stefan Grappelli and Oscar Peterson, and it's a lot more laid back, mellowed out version. So maybe over time I've chilled out and mellowed out a little bit.
Now, were they both your arrangements?
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So did you actually write it out a second time for the second album, or just use the first thing and just kind of do a different thing to it?
We did a different thing. Well, we did in that second one, we did a key change for the solos. Naturally when you have the instrumentation changing with the piano versus like the Visual Quartet version being, you know, the two guitars, violin and bass, I think differently based on who I'm arranging for.
Mm-hmm. And that's just so interesting to hear two different takes on the same tune. But, you know, that's a true classic that you can, even the same artist can look at it two different ways. I mean, you think of how many different times Duke Ellington went back to take the A train. And even though he kind of knew which side his bread was buttered on, he always gave the people what they wanted. There still were tweaks in there to keep it interesting for him.
And the beauty of improvisation is you can always keep it fresh.
Absolutely. You're going to be appearing, and you're going to stick with us after the news, but you're going to be appearing with the Rhythm Future Quartet on Friday, May 3rd at Shrewsbury High School, St. John's High School in Shrewsbury. They've got a great music program there, by the way. They were just here in our studio behind me playing a little combo. They did a fantastic job. And we're so looking forward to this show. As I said, tickets are moving out of here. So give us a call at 508-752-0700 or go online at wicn.org. We'll get you all set for the Rhythm Future Quartet. We're going to go to NPR News now, and we will be back soon.
This is 90.5 WICN Worcester. Listen to us anywhere, anytime, using our online stream. Get it at WICN.org or download the free WICN apps for Apple and Android phones. We're Worcester's only NPR affiliate station, 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. The Supreme Court today heard arguments over how much immunity a former president of the United States should enjoy from criminal prosecution. Former President Donald Trump has argued for absolute immunity. The debate has arisen over the question of whether Trump should stand trial on charges related to the 2020 election and the federal prosecution's case that he participated in efforts to subvert election results. At the Supreme Court today, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson asked this question of Trump's lawyer, John Sauer.
Let me put this worry on the table. If the potential for criminal liability is taken off the table, wouldn't there be a significant risk that future presidents would be emboldened to commit crimes with abandon while they're in office?
Trump's defense team is arguing that without absolute immunity for actions taken while in office, a president could fall victim to baseless, politically motivated prosecutions. The former president was unable to attend the arguments in Washington, D.C. He's back in a New York City courtroom today as the criminal hush money case against him enters day three. But as NPR's Danielle Kurtzleben reports, Trump has worked in campaign stops around New York.
Trump showed up at a New York construction site early Thursday morning where he greeted workers.
You know what? They're very, very talented people. They don't get the credit for it. Very few people can do what they do. We used to do three floors a week in concrete, and it was guys like this that did it. So it's very amazing.
Blue-collar men are a key group Trump has courted throughout his political career. Trump's hush money trial is in session 4 days a week, every weekday except Wednesdays, which limits his campaign travel. Last week, he made a campaign appearance at a New York bodega. Trump also is making some space for his campaign rallies. Next Wednesday, he is scheduled to hold a rally in Michigan. Danielle Kurtzleben, NPR News.
The video of an Israeli-American held hostage in Gaza has given family members of the hostages renewed hope, and they are pressing the Israeli government to reach a deal with Hamas. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports.
As protesters block streets outside the defense ministry, a survivor of the October 7th attack, Iris Ganor, sits in the shade in Hostage Square. She says the video of Hirsch Goldberg Polin raised hopes that more of the hostages are still alive, and she says the government needs to get them home.
Do anything, but I mean anything. Stop the fire, release the prisoners, whatever is necessary, and bring them back.
Israel's defense minister says his forces will fight Hamas everywhere in Gaza until the 133 hostages are home. The protesters argue that negotiations are the only way to get them back. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
Wall Street at this hour, the Dow is off 454, the NASDAQ off 161. This is NPR. In Tanzania, officials say flooding caused by weeks of heavy rain has left 155 people dead and impacted almost a quarter of a million more. The prime minister has told the parliament that the El Nino weather system has made Tanzania's rainy season extremely intense, destroying roads, bridges, and railways, and leading to emergency rescues of people stuck in high water. China blasted three astronauts into space today. NPR's John Ruich has details from the launch site in China's remote west.
Onlookers cheered as the Long March 2F rocket lifted off and lit up the night sky. The three taikonauts, as they're called in China, will spend the next half year aboard China's Tiangong space station. They'll zoom around the planet conducting more than 90 scientific experiments, teaching classes to kids back on Earth, and doing maintenance on the space station. As part of a biannual rotation, they replace the existing crew. Shenzhou 18, as the mission's called, is part of an ambitious space program, and officials say it'll help pave the way for China to put a person on the moon before 2030. John Ruich, NPR News, at the Jiuquan Satellite Launch Center in western China.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in China's financial hub city of Shanghai, where frank discussions about trade are underway. In his first day of meetings there, he challenged the city's top official, the Communist Party secretary, about charges of intellectual property theft and trade policies that have led to a multi-billion dollar Chinese trade surplus with the U.S. I'm Louise Schiavone, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Fisher Investments. Fisher's dedicated team of specialists provide resources on investing, retirement income, estate planning, and more. Learn more at fisherinvestments.com. Investing in securities involves the risk of loss.
Thanks for being with us here on 90.5. You know, the WICN community is strong because of supporters like you who visit WICN.org and become members of the WICN community. Thanks. This afternoon at 3, you'll be in the right zone with Standard Time and Howard Kaplan. Here's your latest local weather forecast.
Today's forecast looks as follows. Sunny today with a high near 56 degrees. Tonight, crystal clear with a low around 30. So yes, we will be below freezing yet again. So make sure your plants are prepared for that. Tomorrow, sunny. High near 58 degrees, pretty much a carbon copy of today. And tomorrow night, clear with a low around 36. Looking slightly ahead to Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 63. So it will be getting warmer as we get through the week. It is currently 52 degrees in Grafton, Mass. It is 51 degrees in Groton. And here on Portland Street, in the heart of the Commonwealth, 48 degrees. Good afternoon. This is The Blend here on 90.5 WICN. I'm your Thursday host, Steve Miller. It is wonderful to have you with us. Thank you very much for hanging out with us. And if you were with us last hour, we have a guest in studio with us, Jason Anik of the Rhythm Future Quartet. And Jason has agreed to hang out with us a little bit longer. Thank you very much for doing so.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
And we're going to turn now to probably the most recent album that you've recorded, called Reverence, a tribute to Stefan Grappelli and Oscar Peterson. And we're going to play a cut called Milo's Bounce. Would you care to introduce that one for us?
Yeah, sure. So this album came out this past March. Really, really excited about it. It's wonderful to be paying tribute to some of my favorite musicians, Stefan Grappelli and Oscar Peterson, and their collaboration. This particular song, Milo's Bounce, is original composition of mine that kind of encapsulates the feeling of being a new dad. My son Milo is going to be coming up to 3 years old.
Wow.
So when I wrote this song, he was maybe 1.5 and was starting to walk and then starting to run and bouncing off.
And starting to bounce.
Starting to bounce off things. And that feeling of a dad, which is both exciting but a little nerve-wracking when you see them doing new experiences, but they always tend to bounce back.
Yes.
And so that's kind of the feeling I try to put into this piece, Milo's Bounce.
And here comes Milo's Bounce. This is Jason Anik on 90.5. WICN, Jason Anik, Matt DeChamplain with Milo's Bounce. And that certainly does sound like a young child who is leaving damage in his wake. I want to talk to you, we've talked about Grappelli a little bit, but when you think of this type of music, Oscar Peterson is not the first name that pops into someone's head. So can you talk a little bit about the collaboration between Grappelli and Peterson?
Yeah, so Of course, Stefan Grappelli is very well known with his collaboration with Django Reinhardt. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where he came up. But over Grappelli's lifespan, he collaborated with almost every jazz musician, every jazz great. And one of my favorite collaborations was the recordings and performances he did with Oscar Peterson. So there's a few albums that we're lucky to have that feature these two greats, and I just love that combination. Mm-hmm. And Matt D. Champlain, who is the pianist on the recording, kind of the Oscar Peterson, if you will, has been a longtime friend of mine, and we connected our second week at the Hart Conservatory and really hit it off. And one of the things that we both loved were those Grappelli and Oscar Peterson recordings. And we always wanted to do a tribute to that sound, that particular aesthetic.
How rare is it to find somebody that has the same level of interest and the knowledge of the genre of music that you have when you're talking about something that goes back so far in history and involves musicians that may or may not be household names? I mean, it's easy to find a Miles Davis fan or a John Coltrane fan, but when you talk about someone who knows, you know, who Stefan Grappelli is, you know, how rare is that?
Yeah, it's not super common. It's always nice when people do have that. But when you meet somebody, my friend Matt, who I've a great pianist, and not only did he know Stefan Grappelli, but is big fans of those particular recordings that I was as well. Yeah, of course, that's an instant bond, and we instantly became friends.
Mm-hmm. When you think about the concept of gypsy music, and I guess I want to ask a fairly broad question here, is that a label that that really is fair to the music? I use an example, the fact that Miles Davis despised the term jazz. He didn't like to be referred to as a jazz musician. He thought that he was playing new music. That's what he kept saying. I'm playing new music. Mm. It's not jazz. But, you know, gypsy jazz, it tends to be a label that gets affixed to this type of music. And is that fair or unfair?
Well, labels are difficult, right? I mean, we do need to label things. If I was booking a show and I said music that is inspired by Django Reinhardt and Stefan Grappelli that came from the 30s but is now influenced by, you know, and has influenced all around Eastern European, you can't do that. You need a term. And so because Django came from that tradition,
mm-hmm.
That's basically where the title came. And we're trying to get away from the term, but it's not easy, right? Because there's some connotations. A lot of people have negative connotations with that word because of it used as a slur.
Yeah.
But most of the artists that I've met who play this tradition, and especially if they are Roma, they don't really have an issue because of the pride they have in this music and the fact that, I'm trying to do it justice and really know the history. And when I talk about this music and I do long form interviews, I really, really enjoy talking about, again, the history of Roma, Sinti, Manouche, and try to, you know, honor it and say how much it's really benefited me and this music has what it's meant to me and how where the roots come from. And that is certainly comes from Django. And so that's the kind of the connection.
As an artist, as opposed to being a business person who's got to sell records or fill a hall or something like that, but as an artist, what would be a term to describe the music that would be less of a pejorative and would be a little bit more encompassing and would that you'd be happy with?
You better believe we're having these conversations, and nothing has been concrete yet, because you can go more vague and just call it acoustic jazz, but that's such a big tent.
That really tells you nothing.
It doesn't tell you anything,
yeah.
Because there could be a lot of different ways that acoustic jazz could go. So it's been difficult, and it's why we keep begrudgingly kind of keep the term in the vernacular until there's a better. And even jazz manouche, which is the French version of it, is kind of similar. It's just a French version of gypsy jazz.
If somebody wanted to go deep into this music, aside from listening to all of your records and listening to Django and listening to, who are the other artists that you would point someone to if they came up to you and said, Jason, I dig this stuff. I really want to listen to as much of this as I can.
So, of course, start pointing at the source, Django Reinhardt, Stefan Grappelli. If you've been tuning in this whole time, I also mentioned Borelli Legrand and Florin Nicolescu, guitarist Borelli, violinist Florin. They were kind of, well, they still are. They still collaborate together. They're, in a way, the modern Django and Grappelli. Other groups, there's a group in France called Les Doigts de l'Homme, Fingers of Men. That's one of, I think, the most creative. And we talked about arranging previously, like where did my inspiration from arranging come from? And I neglected to mention that that band, Les Doigts de l'Homme, is definitely one of my inspirations for this style of music and what's possible with arrangements. There's also an album out there called Selmer 607, which actually features a lot of the current generation of French guitar players. So a lot, it's a good overview, and from there you could kind of do a rabbit hole. But
how do you get the name Selmer? I associate with that saxophone.
Yeah, so Selmer is also, they also made the Selmer McFerry guitars.
Okay.
So the style of guitar that Django played were called Selmers.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's why I show up. I learn new things every time I walk in here. So looking ahead towards the gig, which is going to be Friday, May the 3rd at St. John's High School in Shrewsbury as part of our Brian Barlow concert series, what can your fans or the people who maybe don't know you yet but are coming to the gig, what can they look forward to?
Well, the band is... let's see. Well, I think it's
amazing. We'll just slide that word in right now.
Well, I appreciate it. I know it's always hard to talk up your own stuff, but I think we put on a very compelling show. We really do. Virtuosity and soul, feeling and heart. There's something very magnetic and exciting, but also palatable for even non-jazz listeners about this style because of the rhythmic drive and the accessibility of some of the harmonic elements of it. It doesn't push non-jazz people away. But jazz lovers will pick up on nuance of some of the depth of things that we are doing within the improvisation. So it is something that jazz musicians, jazz lovers, as well as non-jazz people will really like. And we also... throughout our show, we'll transport you to kind of a cafe in Paris. So you can imagine being in Paris in the 30s and 40s and drinking a glass of wine. And
Beret's optional, but you could wear a beret if you want
to. Yeah. So we kind of strike a balance between, you know, pushing the genre into a new realm, we will, with original material and our arrangements, and also bringing in some Latin American rhythms, other rhythms from around the world. And then we'll also have moments where you think that you're watching the quintet, the Cockle of France with Django and Grappelli. And all the band members are, I think, virtuosos in their own right. And when we come together, it's pretty magical. It's a magical combination.
So tell me about the band. You've mentioned the young guy who blows your mind. Who else does your band consist of?
Yeah, so we have Henry Acker, who is a 19-year-old guitar player from Duxbury, Mass. So not too far.
A Mass local kid, done well.
Yeah. And then Max O'Rourke, great guitar player, living in New York. Also a great composer, arranger. And bassist Greg Loafman, who really is, you know, one of the top call bassists in the Boston area, been a longtime friend of mine and really, really solid, and a lefty, which is very obscure for upright bass.
I'm not sure I've seen that.
Yeah, and Greg plays with everybody around Boston. So you've probably played a lot of recordings over the years that feature Greg's playing along with ours. So it's a really dynamic and exciting group. Great combination.
And we should say you are also a local kid. You are a local kid who has done well. You're from Marlboro.
I grew up in Marlboro, and I actually also grew up listening to this station. This a big part of my training was listening, and it was great to be able to hear and listen to 90.5 and all the great jazz that you feature. Has definitely been a part of my journey.
Well, you will definitely want to come to this show. It's the Rhythm Future Quartet as part of the Brian Barlow Concert Series, which will be Friday, May 3rd, 7:30 p.m., St. John's High School, Shrewsbury, Mass. Tickets are going fast. Please make sure you are part of that crowd. It's going to be a fantastic evening. Last question, Jason, before I let you go. What have you been listening to recently? Any type of music that really got you? What have you really liked hearing recently?
That's a good question. Well, I was just listening to Julian Lage's new album.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
He's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of my best friends is also the one who kind of mixes and works with Julian Lage. So that's always fun connection. Yeah. That was probably the last one I listened to. And I love discovering new music. So I'm always trying to keep my eyes and ears out for new projects that kind of the contemporary jazz artists out there are doing.
What do you suggest we go out on? We've got the albums here, and I'm ready to manipulate the CD player as need be.
Okay. Well, how about something different? Since we've featured a lot of the swing and some of the more traditional sounding stuff, why don't we end with something different that we also like to feature at our show? It's
all
a
right.
song called Colorado.
Absolutely. I would love that. The next sound you hear is me loading up the CD player.
Yeah, and this is an original composition that I co-wrote with Max on a day off in Colorado. That's where we started it, and it kind of, to me, encapsulates the feeling of kind of driving through the mountains and the scenic nature of it. It actually has a little bit more Americana roots to it, and I think it's just a great way to send off everybody, and it's just a nice, mellow, a pretty song.
Here we go. This is the Rhythm Future Quartet with Colorado. Jason, thank you for being with us.
Appreciate it.